the book of Ruth, and again we'll just read a section out of each chapter. Chapter 1, Ruth chapter 1, and reading at verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Malon and Chilion, Ephraimites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. In chapter 2, verse 1, and Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Verse 19, this is when Ruth returns from the field, and her mother-in-law said unto her, where hast thou gleaned today? And where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, the man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz. Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said unto her, the man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. In chapter 3, verse 16, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley give he me. For he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. Then said she, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. In chapter 4, verse 1, then went Boaz up to the gate, and sat him down there, and behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit ye down here. And they sat down. He said unto the kinsman, Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land, which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me, that I may know. For there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Then said Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the Dan, to raise up the name of the Dan upon his inheritance. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar mine own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem. Verse 9, and Boaz said unto the elders, and unto all the people, ye are witnesses this day, that I have bought all that was Elimelech's, and all that was Chilion's and Malon's, of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Malon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of his place. Ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate. And the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that has come into thy house like Rachel and like Leah. I thought, like Rachel because she was the most loved, and like Leah because she was the most fruitful, which two did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephrata, and be famous in Bethlehem. And that was Christ for our reading. And we know God will add his blessing to the reading of his own word along with what we've heard. This little book of Ruth that we have read from again this evening is the 8th book in our Bible. I think that is not without significance. You know, there is a beauty in the order of the placing of the books in our Bible. They're not arranged in a haphazard kind of way. For 8 in our Bible is a number of a new beginning. You know, there's 7 days in the week. And when we come to the 8th day, we're really starting a new week. It's just a new beginning. The 8th day is a new beginning. And when we come to this 8th book in our Bible, it is undoubtedly a new beginning. We read last evening, at the end of chapter 1, that it was the beginning of barley harvest. What a beginning it was for Ruth. You know, she had never known Bethlehem, Judah before. My, what a beginning it was for her when she entered the first time into the good of the land. You know, the beginning of barley harvest is just the time of the Passover. That's when the Passover lamb was slain. That takes us back to Exodus chapter 12. You know, that's the basis, my brother, my sister, of every blessing. The blood of the lamb. That's what brought Ruth into the good of it. You remember Exodus 12 at the first Passover this month. Shall be unto you the beginning of months. They were going to have a new start with God. So was Ruth. You pause to answer the question. I wonder how we all have a start with God. I wonder, have we all had beginnings with God? I wonder, can we all look back to a time and say, that's where it all begun. That was my first dealings with God. I say, what a beginning for Ruth when she came for the first time into the good of the land. What a beginning for Naomi. Oh, she had been in a land before, but away from the land for 10 years. Ah, but what a beginning when she got home. What a beginning when she returned. You know, away down in Moab, she had heard that God had visited his people in giving them bread. And you know, she might have thought to herself, well, by the time I get to Bethlehem, Judah, the harvest will be over. But my brother, my sister, it delighted my heart to notice it would just seem as if God had kept it back until she arrived. Not true. No, we're honest with our own heart. Many's the time we were away. In the meeting. Maybe at every meeting. But away in heart from Christ. And then talking to someone like that this evening. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel. Prone to leave the God I love. But what an encouragement here. My, when she retraces the step. You just learned it's the beginning. God has kept the harvest. My, when we return, we discover it's just the beginning. just the beginning of good days. We heard about those good days on that. It's just the beginning of Barlaam. You know, Naomi is a prodigal of the Old Testament. But what does a prodigal find in Luke 15? My, when he was prepared to retrace his steps, he found a robe and a ring and a room in the house. It was all there for him, you know. They hadn't to go out and buy a pair of shoes for him. Shoes were there ready for him. His own size. The robe was in the closet. The very best in the house. And a pot of cow was there just waiting for him. You know, that's the very best. I heard a brother some time ago, he was wanting to paraphrase the gospel, bringing it into a modern language that he thought that folk would understand better. And he came to Luke 15, the fatted cow, and he wondered how he could change that. So he made a visit to the market at Smithfield in London, the big marketplace. And he met one of the high men in the meat market there. He told him what he had in his mind. Now he says, I'm really looking for a prime of beef. He says, the very best you could offer me. What would you call it here? How would you describe it? Well, the man thought for a moment or two. Well, he says, we have an expression in the meat trade. He says, it mightn't mean very much to you. But he says, if we have a choice piece, the very best in the market, he says, we would just call it the fatted calf. And that's what the prodigal found when he came back. The very best was there waiting for him. Just as again. One evening we were thinking of these three poor widows. We thought of Naomi. And we thought of Orpha. And we thought of Ruth. Tonight, as God would give help, I want us to look at the three wealthy men in the story. There is first of all Elimelech. And then there is a nearer kinsman that we've read. And then there is Boaz himself. I suggest to you that Elimelech was wealthy, but not very wise. You know, it doesn't always go together, wisdom and wealth. Sometimes it does, but not always. Elimelech was wealthy, but not wise. I suggest to you that the nearer kinsman, he was wealthy, well, he had resources, but he wasn't willing. But when we come to think of both, I come to consider one who was wealthy, who was wise, and who was wealthy. That's what makes him. First of all, we look at Elimelech. Elimelech, no doubt, was wealthy. Naomi says we went very close. I judge from that he had sold his inheritance before he left. It's hard to do that. To part with what God had entrusted to him. I read in Leviticus 25 and verse 23. God had decreed the land shall not be sold forever. God had entrusted that land to the people of the land. He had given them charge of that land. It shall not be sold for it. You know, as I ponder this today, I couldn't help but think of another man in the Old Testament. We read of him in 1 Kings 21. His name is Naboth. And he has a vineyard. It's just beside the palace of King Ahab. And Ahab would like that piece of ground. He says to Naboth, look, Naboth, you name your price. You just state what you're wanted. I'll give you what you ask. You name the figure. Or he says, if you want another vineyard, even better than the one you have, I'll get it for you. What does Naboth say? It's not for sale. I'll not part with it. Give me what you want. How can I sell the inheritance of my fathers? It has been entrusted to me from God. How can I ever part with it? My brother, my sister, what an inheritance has been entrusted to you and I. Oh, what blessings we have been brought into. Not only the blessing of sins forgiven, and peace with God. Come into the knowledge of the truth of the ascent, and gathering to the precious name of Christ. I had the part with it. And yet there are some today that would part with it so lightly, and hold it of so little value. You know, Paul said to Timothy, that good thing, that good deposit that has been entrusted to you, you guard it. Sad to say, Elimelech, parts what God has entrusted to, and on parts what. Anyway. You know, the famine's the test. Oh, things might be fine as long as things are going well. You know, the famines in our Bible are a lovely study. 13 famines in our Bible. And they always promoted action. You think of Abram in Genesis 12. When the famine crossed the path, what did he do? He didn't eat. Instead of turning to his God, woe unto them that go down to Egypt for him. I've only to turn a few pages, and I come to Genesis 26. And I think of Isaac, Abram's son. And again, the famine has just across his path. Go down to Gerar to dwell among the Philistines. I think the wisest of them all in a day of famine was the prodigal of Luke 15. You know, it was a great day when the famine crossed his path. You know, it was a mercy it ever came. What does he say? I'll go to Egypt? No. I'll go to Gerar? No. I'll go to Moab? No. He says, I'll arise and go to the Father. There's only resources found in the Father. There's only enough in the Father and the Father's house to meet my need. Oh, that that would be true. Remind you, the famine crosses our path from time to time. Every child of God will know about that sometimes. I had to see Elimelech, and he makes his way down. You know, Moab in our Bible always represents Eve. We read in the book of Judges in chapter 3 about the fat man of Moab, the king of Moab, who sits in his son's parlor and takes life easy. There's many a child of God like that. Will he come to the meeting? Never get too involved in that. Just sit on the perimeter. Where are you right now? You know, that's a dangerous place to be. You know, that's what happened to the young man in Acts 20. He couldn't help falling asleep. The preacher went on to midnight. I went on to 10 o'clock, I'm sure there'd be many who want to sleep. I don't fault the young man for going to sleep. I fault him for where he was found. He's in the window. He's just too near the edge of things. The only way he can go is out. Because my brother and my sister, you take it in. Don't sit on the perimeter of that. God has a work for you to do. Something to be engaged with. I must you seek to do. Okay. So we see Elimelech. Well, for his action proved. He's not very well. It's his wife. Come. What about this nearer kinsman you read? I suggest to you that he's welcome. But it turns out that he's not welcome. Now who does he speak of? Well, I think any commentary that you would read, they would tell you that he represents the law. And anyone I've ever heard speak about him, that's what they say about him. I remember being in a Bible reading a few years ago, and this chapter was being discussed, Ruth chapter 4. And that was the line that was taken up. And what I'm going to suggest, I suggested that evening of the reading, I was just like a lone voice in the wilderness. Maybe I'll be the same tonight. But I thought, my brother, my sister, if the second man, the second kinsman, is a picture of a man, and he undoubtedly is, a lovely picture, as we'll see, of the person of the Lord Jesus, then I suggest to you that the nearer kinsman must also represent a man. Not a thing. Well, there was no fault with the law. The law was perfect. I just suggest to you that the nearer kinsman represents the first man. What I am in Adam, the first man is of the earth, Eartha. You'll notice when Boaz speaks to him about the land and about buying the piece of ground, aye, you can nearly see him. The ears pricking up. The eyes opening. There's real estate to be bought. Oh, he's interested in the ground dollar. Why? He's of the earth, Arthur. You all like a bit of ground. My brother, my sister, when it comes to the redemption of persons, when Ruth is mentioned, and when Boaz says, now look, it's not only the buying of the land. You must also purchase Ruth. What does he say? He hangs his hand for his head. Can't do it. I can't redeem. My, if there was ever a lovely picture of the truth of Psalm 49 and verse 7 this year. The psalmist says, none of them. Put them all together, from Adam down. None of them can by any means redeem his brother.
nor give to God a ransom for it. For the redemption of the soul is precious and must be left alone. And so the first man has faith. Oh yes, he's wealthy of it, but he is not. He says, I cannot redeem. Why? Lest I mar thine own inheritance. What's he worried about? The very thing our brother has been speaking about. He's worried about his reputation. You know, the second man is not worried about his reputation. What is reputation? Reputation is what others think of us. Character is what a person is. You know, there was a lovely man of whom Boaz is a picture. I read in Philippians chapter 2. He made himself. Voluntarily, he made himself of no reputation. Did you notice that in the Gospel? They were always looking for his reputation. They couldn't find it. They said he's a friend of publicans and of sinners. This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. What did he do? He just told them a threefold story to prove that. Thank you. It was a different thing when they would touch his character. Turns to them and says, which of you convinceth me of sin? The lovely picture of that in Joseph, of course. Joseph that day, as he left his garment in the hand of Potiphar's wife, lost his reputation. But he didn't lose his character. Here's a man, the first man, he's only interested in his reputation. That brings me quickly to the second man. You know, God ever had in mind the second man. You could trace that throughout your life. You noticed, we mentioned it at the conference. Saul, the first king, failed. But David, as the second, was the man after God's own heart. He was the one in whom the blessing lay. And so it is here, in this book of Ruth. If the first man fails, it only opens up the way for the second man. The first man is of the earth. The second man is the Lord. Not only is he the second man, but I noticed in the reading of this little book, he is the seventh name to be mentioned in the book. We don't read about Boaz at all in chapter 1. But we read about six individuals in chapter 1. Elimelech, Naomi, Mahlon, Chilion, Ruth, and Orpah. So chapter 2 commences with a seventh individual. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name. He is my brother, my sister, not only the second man, but he is the second. He is the seventh man. Man in all. I want just to share with you this evening in the closing moment just four lovely pictures of Boaz in this book. It has delighted my heart just in the types of it in our Old Testament. Just to see a fourfold view of Christ. For God ever had that in mind. Right from the beginning. That fourfold picture of his own son. And I find it here when I come to think of both. You know, the first thing I read about him is in chapter 2, verse 1. He's a mighty man. A mighty man of God. Is that not how Matthew speaks about the Savior? A mighty man. The King.
The one who carries authority.
Speak with authority.
Where the voice of the King is,
there is power.
You say at the closing chapter of that gospel, all power, all authority is given unto me
in heaven and earth. He is, in Matthew's gospel, a mighty man. But more than that, he's a mighty man of wealth.
And I think of Matthew 13.
Find a man who found a treasure in the field. What's he going to do? I think the treasure is Israel.
When he's found the treasure in the field, says he went and sold all that he had.
He bought it.
He bought the field for the treasure that was therein.
Now the cup of the next verse.
He's a merchant man. And he's seeking goodly pearl. When he found a pearl of great price, what did he do? Sold all that he had.
That he might purchase the pearl. My brother, my sister, that's what we have in this book of Ruth.
And that's what I find in chapter 4.
Well, what's Boaz going to do? He's going to buy the fields. He's going to buy more than the fields.
He has found a pearl of great price. He has found Ruth.
And not only will he buy the fields, but he'll pay the purchase price. So my brother, my sister, he is a mighty man.
What?
There's another lovely statement about Boaz. The very last verse of chapter 3.
When Ruth comes home that morning, having spent a night at the Redeemer's feet,
what does Naomi say to Ruth? He says, "Sit still, my God. For the man will not be in Ruth until he has finished the thing that he did. Be not rest in what time."
My brother, my sister, that just brings me into the next gospel.
The gospel according to Mark.
Well, you could write over those 16 chapters of that book. The man will not be. He's a busy servant from beginning to end. It's the onward march of the perfect servant in that book. I read words coming over and over again in Mark's book. Straightway. And on. Immediate. He'll not sit down. It must be done.
There's not a book in the world like the Gospel according to Mark. Did you know that?
Visit all the libraries of men. Take down every book out of the shelf. You'll not find a book like the Gospel of Mark. Why?
Twelve out of the 16 chapters begin with the word "and." Men wouldn't do that.
Over 1,300 times in that little short gospel, I find that little joining word "and." Now I remember at school, more than once, getting my knuckles rapped for that very thing.
Writing a composition, and I did more. Get all those hands out, half of them out anyway, but in something else.
And I know the Spirit of God deliberately put them in the Gospel of Mark. What to do? Tell me of a Gospel that's absolutely packed with a gift.
Andy does this, Andy does that, Andy does something else. The man will not be at rest.
Well, he has finished. Another lovely presentation of the Redeemer in chapter 2.
In Boaz, when Ruth comes back from the field of Boaz, having gleaned in our field all day, he says, where hast thou gleaned today? Where lottest thou? That's a good question for all our hearts.
Not impressed me. Ruth never said where she was. Ruth says, the man with whom I wrought today. So, I have that in.
She got beyond the place. And she got to the one that made the place important. The man with whom I wrought today is Lord.
What did Naomi say? Lovely to see Naomi's appreciation of the Redeemer. She says to Ruth, the man is near of kin unto us.
One of our next kinsmen.
That just brings me into the third gospel. That lovely gospel of Ruth. Well, you could write over that gospel undoubtedly. The man is near of.
Such humanity, Luke tells me, at its lowest point. A babe in a manger.
Only Luke tells me.
When Luke traces his genealogy,
he doesn't do it like Matthew. Go back to David or Abraham.
He goes back to the first man, Adam.
My brother, my sister. What a delightful woman, man. The man that was here was near of kin. Took not on him, Hebrews 2 tells me, took not on him the nature of him. Took on him the seed of his.
It behoved him to be made like unto his brother, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest
in things pertaining to God. You know, the Hebrew letter would tell me that if a man is going to function as a priest, there are two particular requirements. He must be taken from among men. Secondly, he must have feelings for men. He's in a partner. He is unique.
Adam, the first man, was innocent, with a capacity to sin.
My blessed Savior was holy.
He is holy.
Not he was holy. He is holy. Never ceased to be. But he's here. That's what fits him to be the great high priest. He's a real man of the glory.
He has been here. He has known the experiences of life. How fittingly he can represent you and I. It's not a pang that rends the heart.
A man of sorrow. He's near a pin on me. One of them.
come to that court, we'll be thankful. And thank you. Not only is he the mighty man, not only is he the man who'll not be at rest, not only is he the man who's near of kin, but you know, the fourth presentation is unique and different from the first three, for so is John's gospel. John's gospel is unique and different from the other three. And there's a lovely subject, and I want to tie it up with what our brother read in John 13. But throughout this lovely book, he's the lover and the Lord of his own. And that brings me to John's presence. And I just want to confine my remarks to John 13. He's the Lord of the world. You know, the first time Boaz met Ruth, what did he say to her? He says, "Hearest thou not, my daughter?" What was he doing? Claiming her for himself. My daughter. He's letting her know he has claims upon her. And so has the Redeemer claims upon us all. For us with precious blood. And you know, Ruth acknowledged it that very day. What did she say? "Let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord." She acknowledged him as Lord. Indeed. Isn't that what the Savior is saying in John 13? "Did you call me Master and Lord? And you say well, for so I am." You know, he commended them for that. Never once in any of the Gospels did any of those disciples ever address him as Jesus. And we're living in a day that's not very popular now. Jesus. Jesus. Called him Master. Called him Lord. He says, "You say well. So I am." May my brother and my sister teach you. Speak together. But not only is he the Lord of the Lord, in this book, he's the lover of his own. You know, I do believe he loved Ruth in chapter 2. He loved her in the field. He loved her in the threshing floor. But in our verse, our brother read in John chapter 13 and 1. Having loved his own, which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. Well, I know it takes us beyond the cross, but I want to apply it. Well, he's going to love her right to the end. Where does he go? Chapter 4, he goes to the gate. That's where the transaction's paid. And my brother and my sister, that's where it was paid for you and I. Hebrews 13 and 12. Jesus therefore, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, he suffered. How did he? Well, might the writer to the Hebrews in the next verse, "Let us go forth therefore unto him." You see, he is one there. May God help each one of us to go. For that's where he is. "Let us go forth, therefore, unto him, without the camp." Very is. And if you want the law, you'll find it in chapter 4. For the people are there to give. And he called the 10 elders. Does that represent the law?
That's what the law demanded. The law's requirements must be met. They were met at Calvary.
They're all there at the gate. That's why Paul says to King Agrippa, King Agrippa, this thing wasn't on the corner. We're all threatened to see it.
The people were there. The elders were present. Jerusalem was crowded.
Yet as I close, I want to say this. May have been in public. There's something intensely private about it all. But we're never told what Boaz had to say.
The price is never stated.
And my brother, my sister, it could never be explained.
Calvary, dark Calvary. Mercy's vast on fathom.
Love each.